This is Bob Ambrogi, and this is another of our continuing series of recordings made at the Clio Cloud Conference here in San Diego. We've been talking with a number of the attendees here, both speakers, vendors, just regular participants. Right now, I have the pleasure of speaking with Jane Reardon. Hi, Jane. How are you?
I'm well, Bob. Thanks for having me. Nice talking with you.
Nice to talk to you. And Jane is the Executive Director of the Illinois Supreme Court Commission on Professionalism. I have that right, right?
Yes, that is a long title, and you got it right. Most people don't. It's a real tongue twister, I must say.
Yeah. And what is the Illinois Supreme Court Commission on Professionalism?
All right. So this is a commission, one of many commissions and boards that the Illinois Supreme Court has established to help do its work. We have our Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission, and we have other commissions, including ours, which was established in 2006 with the mission to promote professionalism, diversity, and civility in the bench and bar, and also to promote a more effective, efficient, and equitable legal and judicial system. So it's a very hortatory commission with a broad mission statement.
Yeah, and so how do you do that? What do you go? What's
so it's mostly education.
Yeah.
We do a lot of CLEs, a lot of public speaking, a lot of writing. We connect with a lot of people through social media, and we do weekly emails as well as a monthly e-news, and have over 50,000 subscribers to our e-news. So, and people actually tell me they click on the articles and read them. So
that's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How long have you been doing that?
The commission was established in 06. I came on board as deputy director then, and since 2009, I've been the executive director.
What was your background before you came to the commission?
So I had started my career as a trial lawyer at Wildman, Harold, Allen & Dixon, a now defunct firm in downtown Chicago. It went through a number of mergers. Then I went to the Chicago office of Kelly, Dry & Warren doing other civil litigation. After the third baby was born, the rigors and the joys of trial work kind of got to me. And I ducked into a more steady work life at the Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission, actually. And I was counsel to the review board there, reviewing cases where lawyers had been disciplined or not for violating the rules of professional conduct. I did that for almost 11 years, and then when the court established this commission, I jumped at the chance to be more creative and proactive and work on behalf of the profession.
Yeah. How does teaching about professionalism differ from teaching about professional ethics and the rules of professional conduct?
So in a nutshell, I have a graph. The horizontal line is the floor, and that is the compliance with the rules of professional conduct. That's legal ethics.
Yeah.
If you violate legal ethics, you're subject to discipline. But as I say, you know, there's a whole host of behaviors that people recognize as more professional than merely complying with the ethical rules and not getting hauled before the ARDC for discipline. And so we try to inspire, try to talk about things like civility, things like respect, things like at the end of your workday, how do you feel about what you accomplished in terms of using your talents to make the world a better place. So it is very aspirational, and there's no end to it, right?
Right.
I say
yeah.
It's kind of like a performing art. You know, if you're taking violin lessons, you're never as good as you can be.
Right. And I should have said before, but your website is tocivility.org. I know that you follow closely what's going on, obviously, in Illinois, but on the national scene as well, around issues of professional regulation. And there's that old, the Irish curse that may you live in interesting times. I think we're living in fairly interesting times right now.
I would agree.
Yeah, I'm sure you would agree. What do you think, I mean, so... I, you know, obviously, and I've talked on this podcast before, I mean, there's very sort of concrete efforts underway in several states to revisit the rules of professional conduct as they may better allow for services to be provided, to better close the access to justice gap in this country. And I'm wondering kind of how closely you're following that and what sort of from the big picture level, we can talk more specifically about it, but from a big picture level, what you see is driving this trend and where we might be going with it.
Yeah, I've been following this trend for well over a decade and have been surprised, you know, as we talked about before, about how quickly changes seem to be under consideration at this moment in time. Over the last year to 18 months, there's been more developments and serious consideration, at least, than in the prior decade or more. I think the reason is, although we have been well aware of the access to justice gap from dozens of studies in many, many states for many, many years, what has happened lately in the, over the last several years is there's more documentation, in fact, around CLIO's data that lawyers are not thriving, they're far from thriving in the current climate. And so, as I've written, if the rules of professional conduct are at all part of the constraints that are contributing, that is contributing to the access to justice gap for our potential customers, or hindering lawyers from being able to thrive and deliver those services, we as a profession have the obligation to look at changing those rules, and many people in many states are now taking a hard look at that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've worked in this area for a number of years. What do you think? Do you think the rules are in some way inhibiting access to justice?
I do. I think particularly the rules against paying for recommendations or referrals, Rule 7.2, so, a huge hindrance in being able to have lawyers find clients and clients connect with lawyers. I also think that most of the provisions of Rule 5.4 are not ethical considerations at all, but are rules of economics and business structures that are hindering lawyers being able to collaborate with other professionals in meaningful ways and get investments into their businesses.
Yeah. You remind me that, maybe 2 years ago now, the Illinois
ARDC.
Yeah, ARDC put out a report talking about loosening some of the rules on referral fees. Has anything happened with that?
Actually, yes. Yeah. I'm glad you asked. That report was out there for about 2 years.
Yeah.
Many people commented on it. The ARDC has taken those comments and has made a recommendation, as I understand it, that will be ensconced in writing and submitted to our court this fall. Perhaps as early as the end of this month. And they expect some action on that. Maybe it will be a proposed rule change and time for public comment again. Not sure what, but yeah.
Is it similar to along the same lines that the report had originally addressed, or has it moved beyond that at all?
My understanding, and I haven't seen
anything, okay.
But I've talked with Jerry Larkin, who's the administrator of the ARDC, that it is quite similar. It's talking about evening the playing ground the playing field between referral organizations that are not for profit, like bar associations, and the for profit ones, requiring some soft regulation around registration and reporting and whatever, and allowing lawyers to affiliate with for profit referral services.
Yeah. Obviously, a huge topic of conversation in a number of states now is this question of allowing, loosening the rules around private, non-lawyer ownership in the delivery of legal services. Utah is embarking on its developing its regulatory sandbox. Other states are looking at this somewhat seriously. Haven't quite gone as far as Utah. What are your thoughts about that?
So I'm really interested to see where Utah goes, because I feel that we cannot change the rules of professional conduct that affect lawyers and expect meaningful societal change, because there are many, many people who are not lawyers delivering legal services right now. So the idea of a regulatory sandbox and regulation of those who are not lawyers, I think, has to go hand in glove with easing the rules of professional conduct. So I think they're onto something there. I think it's going to be challenging to actually implement, and how that all comes out will be very, very interesting.
Yeah. What do you see as the challenges?
Actually figuring out a way to draft regulation that is clear, so that people know what they need to do to be in compliance with the regulation. Okay, so you have a regulatory sandbox. That's great. Love that innovation, love that variety, but at some point, before new players come in, they want to know what are my chances of actually being able to deliver this service, to be in compliance. What does it take, right? So we have to be clear down the road about those requirements, and actually figuring that out is going to take some time, and it's going to be challenging.
Yeah. Do you think that resistance? Do you think there? What kind of resistance do you expect to see from the bar, the organized bar, or the bar more broadly, just the legal profession more broadly? And do you think there's anything to that position?
It's my understanding that there's pretty broad opposition in California to the recommendations that came out. Unfortunately, having read through many of those comments, I think that the commenters have not taken a really intellectually critical look at the recommendations to really understand what those are.
Yeah.
There's a lot of emotionality around this because lawyers' self-identity is tied up with this construct that we have built, right? And to change that is very, very threatening. So I expect there will be opposition by members of the bar. And here's the thing. It's hard to get the public involved in this conversation. The ones who we're supposed to be serving, the ones who we are not serving, they don't understand the rules, the constraints. They just know, it's kind of irrelevant to them. Lawyers, the costs, the whole thing. And that's a shame. But I think another challenge to this will be to engage consumers into this dialogue, which is done to a greater extent in the UK, of course.
Yeah.
They have it set up so that consumers are part of the process.
Yeah.
So
I think that's an interesting point. I mean, I was thinking about that yesterday during Jack Newton's keynote here at Clio. He talks about, Clio's goal is helping to kind of help close the access to justice gap, and he's looking at it as largely a sort of a market fit problem in a way. Whereas I think a huge part of the problem is that so many consumers just don't have the money for a lawyer. It's not that they can't find a lawyer; they don't have the money even if they could. But so many more don't get that this is a legal problem at all that they have, or they don't think about how the legal system works, so they're not thinking about these issues. They're not a lobby for reforming the legal system, because they don't think about it.
Yeah, it's not part of their lives, right? Rebecca Sandiford did a study that showed, I think, 16% of the people never even considered that they have a legal problem. They don't identify their problems as legal to begin with.
Yeah.
So they don't even get to the point that lawyers are too expensive or what they should do about it.
Yeah. So what are your predictions? What do you think is going to happen in terms of regulatory reform? Are we going to see it in the next 10 years, see some substantial regulatory reform?
I think so. I think it'll be fewer years than that. Whenever you're dealing with innovation, I was just thinking about all those changes that happened in Washington State with the LLMs,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So was it Jeff Bezos who says people overestimate the short term and underestimate the long term impact of innovation? So they've backslid in Washington State, largely due to change in bar leadership. But I think they're because of those innovations, as a profession, we're further along that track. I don't think there's any way to go back. Whether the recommendations from Arizona or California or Utah or Illinois are ultimately adopted in those states or not, they're out there now, and they're part of the discussion. And I think some form of regulation will start to happen.
Yeah. I'm curious. I mean, I'm in Massachusetts, which is a fairly liberal state in a lot of ways, and there's just no talk about this stuff at all happening. I mean, I'm not aware of any real conversations going on, you know, even within the kind of the access to justice movement in Massachusetts. I look forward to seeing how this, you know, whether there is a domino effect, essentially.
That point, Bob, I think it's very important that there be some uniformity. We can't start adopting 54 different new sets of regulations. We saw what that did with the advertising rules.
Yeah.
And I'm optimistic because I look to the UBE, right? Now, 37 states in a relatively short period of time have coalesced around the idea that we know what it takes for someone to be admitted to the bar, to be a competent lawyer.
Yeah.
So if we can agree on that across the states, why can't we agree on regulations that guide their behavior after they become members of the bar? And so to that point, I just want to let you know that, I'm not sure if we talked about this or not, that there's two national organizations looking at this issue as well, the Association for Professional Responsibility Lawyers, which is looking at it holistically and expects to put out an interim report by the year end, and also IELTS, the Institute for the Advancement of the American Legal System, which is kind of a think tank organization in Denver.
Out of Denver, yeah.
Yeah, they're working with Utah and with April to kind of come up with a template, some considerations for re-regulating both via the rules of professional conduct and those who aren't lawyers.
Yeah. Hey, it's been interesting, actually, the Association of Professional Responsibility Lawyers has been taking almost a leading role in pushing for, or at least thinking about, talking about some of these reforms.
They have
been. You know, so if the folks who are in the trenches on this stuff are seeing that there's more likely to be positive consumer outcomes than negative consumer outcomes out of some of these reforms, I think that tells you something.
Yeah, these are lawyers who largely represent other lawyers.
Yeah.
They're deeply steeped in the rules, right? So they took the leadership role with respect to the advertising rules.
Right.
As you might know, the ABA has taken many failed attempts at looking at these rules. So I'm optimistic that April and IELTS might be more successful.
Yeah. So to kind of circle back to where we started, so we were talking about professional regulation, rules of professional regulation, rules of professional ethics, and we were talking before about sort of the broader picture of professionalism, civility in the profession. Do those concepts have an impact on access to justice as well?
I think that some of us have superimposed on the rules of professional conduct some considerations of professionalism or our viewpoint, what it means to be a professional lawyer, that in fact has contributed to the access to justice problem. And I think we need
to exacerbate it.
Yes. So we need to figure out what is very important about being a profession rather than just a purveyor of legal services, if anything, and how do we keep those in the rules? I mean, there's certain things like confidentiality, right?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
that conflicts of interest that we need to shore up and hold on to and make sure are protected. But whether we practice alongside another professional is not part of that,
right?
In my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking, it's interesting that when I was a younger lawyer, we talked about civility, not as much as people do now, but it was always a concept of a lawyer-to-lawyer concept. It was, how do you treat your other lawyers in the process of litigation or whatever? How do you treat the judges? How do you treat sort of the professionals in the system? But with so many pro se litigants in the system now, in some courts, 90% of the litigants, 90% of the cases, at least one party is not represented by a lawyer. Civility must be a concept that extends into how do you deal with those people who are not professionals in the system, right?
Yeah, we do a lot of training with judges and with litigants, or with lawyers rather, about dealing with the pro se litigants. It's a huge, huge challenge. And the issue of civility is also a challenge because, of course, the legal system is a microcosm of society. And so how we treat one another is very different in 2019 than it was in, 1909.
Yeah.
Yet, when the concept is of respect and making sure that people understand that they have rights and that their rights are protected, which is part of civics, which is the same kind of word that civility comes from. Those are important concepts, in my opinion, that we should strive to keep in this debate as we consider changing some of the rules of professional conduct.
What else are you working on? Anything else on your mind these days? Anything else you're focusing on these days?
Well, we're focusing on a lot of things, but I think we've covered the basic thing. The other thing, the other piece of this that my colleague has written on, and I think it's part of the access to justice debate and it's part of the regulation debate, is the distribution of lawyers across our state and many others. Yeah. I was talking to people here at this conference. These are small firm, solo firm practitioners. They can't find anyone to take on their practice. They're one of two lawyers still practicing in their counties.
Yeah.
And this is going on all over our country, which is a huge problem because unless we figure out a way to serve people one-to-many using technology and other resources, they are literally shut out of the legal system. And some of these lawyers feel handcuffed. You know, I'm ready to retire, but I'm responsible. I have a payroll to meet. I'm responsible for my clients.
Yeah.
We in Illinois have 16 states that have not admitted, or I'm sorry, 16 counties in Illinois have not admitted a new attorney in the last 5 years.
Wow.
And half of them have admitted fewer than five new attorneys. So the graying of our attorneys, especially in the rural, non-urban areas, is a huge problem, and that plays into the delivery of legal services and providing that for the people.
Yeah, that's a whole other aspect of the access to justice issue, is there are some areas where there just aren't lawyers or there aren't enough lawyers, even if you want to go find a lawyer.
Great. So this is one of the reasons that at the Commission on Professionalism every year we put on a futures conference. The future is now, Legal Services 2.0.
Which I'm going to get to one of these days. We keep trying to get to
that. Put it on your calendar. Yeah. It's April 23rd, 2020.
Okay.
So, it's a great conference statewide, but we have people from all over.
Yeah, I've always heard good things about it.
It's us trying to get the message out. Not as big as Clio, of course, but in a different way.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of lawyers, all sorts of legal providers, and we have to figure out a way to work together and do a better job for the citizens who need legal services.
Yeah. Well, Jane, thank you very much for taking some time out of this conference to sit and talk with me today.
I enjoyed it, Bob. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks. See ya.